unwarranted music opinion. Unwarranted music opinion. I don't care if you don't want to hear my opinion about your robot.
Oh, we still didn't peak, so it's good.
Welcome to the Unwarranted Music Opinions Podcast, the show where three music listeners choose an album that everybody has to listen to multiple times. They're forced to do it, even if it's something that they'd never go for in a million years.
Man, you really hated my album.
And then we all gather around and we talk about it. I'm Jacob Lindberg, and
sick boy.
I'm here with Chaz Jenkins.
What's up, everybody?
And Brian Courtney.
It was only 8 minutes.
And this week we are talking about therapeutic albums. That's the theme. They're albums that we go to when we're feeling down that bring us back up again, or at least don't make things worse. Yeah, that's about right. That's about right.
For those who don't know, Weezer, most recognizable bands from the 90s, I'd say. They're up there with Foo Fighters, Green Day, Smashing Pumpkins. That, when you think of 90s alternative rock, you think of Weezer. They're one of the bands most people go to. Smash debut in 1994, Blue Album, huge hit. Then comes their second release, Pinkerton. First, critics despised this album. It bombed. And it made Rivers depressed, and their music has never been the same since. It is, they are still slowly recovering. It's been like 2 decades, and we're still slowly recovering from it,
and then they go back down again.
Yeah, what is it? They we're getting there. Oh, Ube White, and then Pacific Daydream. But that's a whole other story.
Pinkerton, but if I'm pausing throughout this entire podcast, I apologize.
Oh, it's okay.
Under the weather.
Pinkerton is...
We'll censor it.
Yeah. Most fans consider it to be their best album just because of how raw and emotional and lyrical it is. Some would say Blue is their most professional album, but they made Pinkerton on their own. There really wasn't much studio backup. It was most of them doing most of the work themselves. And it shows. It's not a perfectly made album, as we'll get into it, but when you really get into the gritty, it's a masterpiece. Let me do enough talking. What do you guys think?
I really, really enjoy this album. I do prefer the Blue Album. I don't love this album, I absolutely understand.
Brian is still my favorite.
This is where we
I'm still, for those of you who don't know, last episode they tore my, and so listening to this album made me feel a little better, because I was in a bad state of mind. Yeah. Brian's still my favorite of this bunch.
This is a very, very good album. The songwriting is very consistent. It's catchy.
For me,
it's
lyrically,
power pop.
This is my favorite album lyrically.
I think the songwriting is still really compelling.
Do you want to know the background?
This just seems like an amalgamation of relationships gone wrong for this guy, you know?
Well, and I'm going to...
He also had an injury, right?
He went to, if I remember correctly, the second album was going to be this... And fans like to dub this the Songs from Black Hole. Their second album was going to be a rock opera written around this character and his relationship with this woman.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and a lot of the songs on this album were going to be in there.
They're based off of an actual play, I believe. Loosely.
But then he suffered a serious leg injury while he was studying at Harvard, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rivers Cuomo, at least, went to Harvard, if that tells you anything. And he was just high off his ass on painkillers and... Instead, wrote this album, and it's basically, if you're having a bad relationship, this is the album to listen to, and that's why it means a lot to me, because, I can relate to every single song. This is why it means so much to me. I can relate to every single song on this record. Every song, I'm like, you're preaching to the choir, Cuomo. Preaching to the choir.
I don't really relate to it, but I really appreciate it. I absolutely appreciate the authenticity, and you can tell it's genuine because it's almost embarrassing.
Yes, thank you.
And
wow.
But I like that.
That's actually one of my problems. Sometimes the lyrics are a bit too much. Like Across the Sea is as.
But I think
there are some questionable lines.
Yeah, there is. And that's the point.
Yeah, I agree with Chaz. Actually, I think as an artistic statement,
you're meant to be a little
like he's
really
low.
He's probably
low.
His lowest point when he made this, and people hated it. How do you think that makes you feel as an artist?
And you can tell he is just by believing, like the songwriting, the songs are upbeat, they're catchy, they're still Weezer, they're still, yeah, still a power pop album.
There's still a lot of Blue Album on Pink.
But oh, it's so raw. In El Scorcho, when that bridge hits, like, it's coming from the heart, that stupid, like, oh my god, so good.
El Scorcho's a favorite. I really
absolutely.
For most people, like, Pink Triangle is probably the best song off this.
Pink Triangle is hilarious. It's not my favorite, but wow, it's funny.
Growing up, I think, like how I said, Andrew WK got me through middle school, high school, this is the band for me. And songs like Why Bother, I was playing every, like, other day. What a song.
That is, like, my least favorite track on this
album.
It's
probably the catchiest.
I like
me.
It
what
a it's
melody.
Really short and
what a
simple,
melody.
And I feel like it just makes its statement, and then it gets out. And I think it's like a 2 minute long track. It does that very well.
I was grateful for its brevity because I didn't like it. I just couldn't really get into this track. One of my favorites, subject-wise, was No Other One. Is probably the darkest track on here when you look into it. It's about a girl, assumedly, who has a lot of... It's like a drug problem, I'm guessing. Or, like, is maybe... Like,
I see it as, like, she's cheating on him. She's treating him like crap, but he's like...
But he's like, I don't want to be alone. It's very dark.
It's very toxic. A lot of fans also really love Tired of Sex. Like,
I guess it's a very good
that,
one.
Oh, when that bass hits, the, like, oh my god. The
first thing I wrote was
the
wow,
riffing and bass work on this album, and Pat's drumming is phenomenal.
I
all
think
around.
It's not technical, it's so earnest. Like, it's
that,
so direct.
It's
simple.
So loose.
They're not,
it's,
like, the solo, even the solos are some of the most simple work ever, but they're so satisfying, and, like, you know, I don't
some
know.
Of their. Besides Blue, it's some of their most memorable guitar work. Oh,
I guess that was one of my favorite things about this album is how just, like, upfront it is. Like, there's no... Reezer's not pretending on here.
It's 35 minutes long.
Yeah.
It makes a statement, and then it gets
What'd you guys think of Butterfly? Probably some of the, like, what a...
Pretty great song.
It's no one that I'm going to go back to on its own.
Only in Dreams will it forever be their best closer.
But it works very well as a closer.
Tracks I'd go back to, even though I'm criticizing some of the questionable lyrics on there, Across the Sea is, like, one of those cool
I think
moments.
It's the most, like, emotionally earnest and personal, like, I'm telling you everything I'm feeling song. It gets deep in
there. For me, I relate to his infatuation on that track, that instant, it's not a connection. It's very much a fake feeling when you're like, my God,
it's infatuation.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's such a very human emotion, so I very much relate
absolutely.
To that track. Otherwise, Get You is another, like, kind of sleepy moment for me. Not really into
yeah,
it's kind of too emo.
For
it's
me,
it
goes.
Moment, it's like the only moment on the album where I'm, like, cringing a little bit. I'm like, because this guy, he just sounds like a
that chorus is pretty rockin', though.
It's one of the more annoying ones to me. I don't really like the refrain.
See, well, for me, like, this isn't my favorite Weezer album. For me, it goes
Tired of Sex. I'm like,
it goes Pinkerton, White, Blue. That's my, like, top three.
Whoa, you like the White album better than the Blue album?
No. Pinkerton, White, Blue. Blue will always
be
my
favorite. White album is better than Pinkerton.
In my
that's
opinion.
A pretty cool opinion. That's my, like, favorite thing about music is hearing opinions like that.
Yeah.
Like, when someone comes through and is like, Pablo Honey.
I've never...
It's like,
little
whoa,
tangent on
whoa.
White. Little
it's
tangent
like
on
never
White.
Been
I've never heard an album flow so well together. Each track is like, wow, 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 wow. There's only one song in there I'm like, eh, which is why Blue will be better. Because each track on Blue is yes, all the way through. Pinkerton, like Brian, like, gets you... No One Else, Falling For You. They're great songs, but they're not my favorite. But everything else on it, like,
it's pretty,
always
I mean,
coming back
it's
to
still
it.
A great release. I could see myself coming back to this thing, especially, like, tracks
for
like
me, it means so much to me, because, like I said, like, each song, I'm like, man, I feel what this song is telling me. I've either been through or I've felt something that Rivers is singing about.
Good Life.
That's a great...
That's the best track on this album.
The
that
bridge
is hilarious. Is catchy
and it's
has
sad
some great
too.
Playing. It's so funny. It's so funny.
I love some of the quirkier. I love that diary work lyricism that Rivers has through all of his work.
This is like the upbeat version. I'm surprised how much Pinkerton for me had in common with Down Colorful Hill. They're
as we'll get
very,
into
very different
Japanese
approaches.
Girls. We'll get into
but
that. But, like,
I know
there's
what, it blew my mind when
I was like, "There's some similarities here."
Like when they're both talking about Japan, I was like, "Was this strategic?" I was like, "Holy!"
We planned it from the start, me and Jacob.
It blew my mind.
But Good Life, like
Good Life is like the
it's
up,
a very
super
very good track.
Upbeat version of 24.
A lot of people don't like that line from El Scorcho. Where
I see it in your eyes, you agree?
I can kind of see it.
It's a stretch.
It is a stretch.
Wait, what did you say? What did you say?
Good Life is like the super upbeat, like in a mirrored reality, is the upbeat version of like 24.
Oh yeah. Well, as we'll get into later in the podcast, I would agree a little bit. Yeah, but a lot of people talking about lyrics more, like some lines like, "I'll bring home the turkey if you bring home the bacon." I personally love that line, which is ironic. A lot of some.
It's
of
one
people,
of the most lighthearted tracks on the album.
It's so corny,
sure.
But I really enjoy that line.
I really appreciate that, and I'll talk about this again when we get into Down Colorful Hill. But when you have an album that lyrically is quite dark, and there's like one or two moments of levity,
mm-hmm.
and like
it's not serious all the time,
you kind of get the sense that they're not taking themselves too seriously. The artist, you know, Cuomo's not trying to shove any kind of ideology
down his
throat. He's not taking himself too seriously when he can make little funny quips like that.
On Pinkerton, for sure, he's not taking.
And it makes the whole thing feel more authentic because
mm-hmm.
of that.
Because mm-hmm.
he's taking the piss out of it.
It's not like he's no, you know.
This is the
confined
like,
to a mood.
Taking the piss out of the situation, the album, like. Every song is.
He's very.
Well, this
aware.
Really sucks, but hey, what can you do?
He's very aware that this is. These aren't terribly serious problems. This is girl trouble. He's aware that it's not. When he gets the most.
Oh yeah, the subject matter
album,
isn't anything like heart wrenching.
When
but
he's talking,
so...
when he's talking about how he feels about himself, is or some of the more darker. But when he's talking about like how he feels bad for like he when and gets you. There are moments where he's talking about how he comes on. He's like, I come on a little strong. Like when he's critiquing himself on that song. It's still lighthearted, but it's a little more serious. And
it makes you wonder how we go from there to Ratitude, where one of the songs is titled I'm Your Daddy, and the chorus is You're My Baby Tonight and I'm Your Daddy, and then the second verse leads into I Hope I'm Not Freaking You Out. I'm not like those other guys. It's like, you just said in This Woman in the Club, I'm Your Daddy. You just said it to her. What the
don't
hell are you
those,
talking about?
Don't let those... I've not heard Ratitude, but I know. I'm aware of his reputation.
For all you listening out there, listen to Ratitude. You will get a good laugh, because it's ridiculous.
Or just don't. Just never.
Or, some albums are so bad, they're essential.
Like
that's true.
That everyone should... You should go listen to Revival. It's like, here's a very bad pop rap album. Listen to this. Listen to this album.
Yeah, I mean, listening to bad stuff lets you appreciate the good stuff more. But I don't know, man. Is Ratitude really a must listen?
Can we not... Let's not let this devolve into Ratitude. Come on.
All right.
Since it's not my favorite, like, I do have some problems with it, but 8 out of 10. It's one of my... For a band to... For this to be their second release, I think what people didn't get it is that we had so much grunge and what people liked about Weezer is that they were kind of lighthearted and goofy while they did touch some serious subjects in Blue, like Say It Ain't So.
So yeah, when they got dark.
When Pinkerton came out, people were like, what the hell is this?
Right.
So, you know.
I
but over the time, people were like, this is good. Like, this is really good.
I don't love this album. I would be at like a very solid 7. I want to love it more. I wish I was at that next level with it, but I do have a couple of issues with it. Firstly, while the songwriting is very consistent, like the second half doesn't fall off or anything, there are a few tracks in here, like Get You, that I'm not super big of a fan of. Also, it is very simple, but it kind of makes me miss the more ambitious songwriting on the Blue album.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different take. It's not one that I connect with immediately. I also don't really relate to much of the lyrics here, so I don't connect to it in that way either, though I do think that they are very, very good part of this album. So I will say this album is very good. I don't think it's... just can't make the leap to saying, like, a great, great
release. I'd say if you've had, like, a serious bad relationship in any sort of way, this is the album to listen to. It doesn't make you feel better, but it's just nice to know that someone out there is dealing with the same thing you are, and it feels good to hear it through song.
I think appreciate the context surrounding this album almost
what a
maybe even
album
more
cover.
Than I actually like.
What a beautiful album cover, too.
It's okay.
It's so good. It's a great art piece, too. That's what it's sending around.
I think, like, this album is oddly complex for why I like it. Because most of the song topics here are just moody white boy fodder, but they're framed in such a satirical way that I get behind him by the end of the album. I'm very much for his issues, and I think there's some, you know, I think on songs like No Other One and Across the Sea, they're very revealing I think the funnier moments on here are the stronger ones, especially El Scorcho, Good Life, and Pink Triangle.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are
great. I would agree.
I like those moments better. Tired of Sex is maybe one of the better serious songs, too, if I want to give that track more credit for talking about, you know, tired of being, you know, tired of groupies and stuff like that, want something real. There's a moment on the album that's very, very, very good where he's like, I have to turn in my rock star card to get old and fat with you. Hilarious. I'm feeling an 8 on this thing. I do love this
nice.
Thing. Because it's so simple, but it's very aware. Its formula uses it to its strength and isn't afraid to mock the moodiness of the album.
And written on while high off painkillers with a broken leg.
I can
good
tell.
Good job, Cuomo. Good job.
It's a pretty great release. You know, it's better than Blue, in my opinion.
I wouldn't go that far.
I wouldn't go that far, but I do agree that
but
this album,
if
you haven't heard
favorite,
it.
If this is your favorite Weezer album, more power to you, because I get it. I really get it.
I have chosen the debut album by Red House Painters, which is the band that singer-songwriter Mark Kozlik was behind in the early 90s. He's now making music with the label Sunkill Moon. He's been around for quite some time, had a lot of different music, quite a few different styles, but what connects all of it is just this general sense of melancholy. Even in the sad, or even in the happy moments on his albums, his entire discography is marked by some pretty sad music, and Down Colorful Hill is absolutely no exception to this. It is one of the prime albums of the slowcore movement of the early 90s, when
slow is right.
When there were a lot of, you know, there was a lot of grunge and upbeat rock music that was popular at the time, and they decided to just turn around and go the exact opposite direction. Bands like Low and Codeine and Red House Painters. This album, Down Colorful Hill, incorporates a lot of like folk rock and singer-songwriter elements, and really the entire album was demo tracks. Actually, this entire album
sounds very demo.
They just took the demo tracks, mixed them a little bit, slathered on a bunch of reverb.
You can hear
released
it. And the first track, you can hear static.
Which is strange because I thought the production on this record was pretty good.
Well, it works. It absolutely. Yeah. There was very little studio.
If you didn't
work.
Tell me this demo, I would have never guessed.
Yeah, they just mixed everything. Put on a bunch of reverb. Released.
I saw a comment on one of the songs, and it just said, "Stoner folk."
Stoner folk?
Stoner folk.
I disagree.
It was a 10-minute long.
I think that's an insult to it.
I disagree totally.
Well, okay. All right, can I start, or do you want to start, Brian?
Because
how I'm going to talk about this album is
I'm more curious to hear what you have to say, because Jacob probably knows what I have to say.
To give you a broad sense, how you felt about Pinkerton is more how I felt about this release. So our which is ironic, because both have to do with Japanese girls, which is very interesting.
Well, one track, that's the sub-story on this one, is these weird allusions to Japan.
I don't know why. I've listened to this album
and you have no
dozens and dozens
there's
of
no
times.
There's no context, and for me that strengthens the mentions.
I drank so
there's
much
a whole
tea,
song.
I wrote my letters in kanji.
It's the weakest song on here, in my opinion, is Japanese to English, but like still, like
I thought that was more heartfelt.
Kind of.
Let's go with what I liked. What I did like was how somber, how real, very great lyricism. It was, this guy was singing from the heart, no question. I wrote down, this sounds like if Portishead and Radiohead mangled together and released an album.
I disagree totally.
I see so much of that sound and
he's
instrumentation.
A slower Neil Young, Chaz. You've got to expand your horizons.
Even
man.
When you like Lindbergh's music, he's just like, I disagree,
Chaz.
Got
it totally wrong. I mean, maybe aesthetically. Musically, though, it takes a lot
not
of cues.
Well, Portishead not musically. A little more Radiohead musically, but just that long, like
it's more. Its roots are more in folk than something like
stoner folk.
No.
All right. Well, so this sounds long.
It's 43 minutes long.
These tracks are long and a little too long. I will say the lyricism does make up for that, so it doesn't feel like I'm just sitting there for 10 freaking minutes on a song about a dude's home in San Francisco, but.
Jacob's face.
Look, I didn't hate this, and I didn't love it. There was a lot about this where I'm like, This is too much.
That's a light six. You hear that?
I can hear it in the tone of his voice. The score.
It's not a six. It's just...
There it's a five.
It was a two. I'm getting revenge for Diet Sig.
I didn't read the lyrics.
I don't think Down Colorful Hill is about his home in San Francisco. Totally.
That's when I looked into it.
I love you saying this and knowing what the music he's making today is, where it's like 12-minute songs about what he had for lunch. I still love it, but...
See, too much.
I don't know. That's for me, I struggled. My first listen to this, I kind of felt the way you did, but the more listens I got, I found that I was being impatient, but also this album is uncompromising.
See, that's the exact opposite. First listen, I was like, this is pretty good. And then my second listen, I was like...
See, the thing is...
My first listen, I was ready to give this thing...
Like, I was the exact opposite of Brooklyn.
I was ready to give this thing six on my first listen. I was like, I do not really care for this thing that much. But I think the latter... For me,
it's definitely, an experience. You've got to listen to it all the
way through. This album is absolutely an album for a particular mood, and...
And I can tell.
If you are not in a certain mood, this is going to be so foreign...
And you're going to need to listen more.
So I got to know.
This isn't an album I can listen to all the time.
Pinkerton for me is all about relationships. And I've been through many. So that's why that album speaks so much to me. Why is this album therapeutic to you? What is going on in your life where, like, this is the album I have to listen to?
This album is pure, undiluted sadness.
It is
dense,
especially on songs like 24 and Lord Kill the Pain.
That's honestly my favorite.
That's one of the darkest songs.
Which is ironic because it's the fast, drums. That's my favorite. It's got pace.
If I can talk about the lyrical aspects to this album,
far and away the best thing about it.
A lot of it
for me. Yeah.
I honestly connect more like the.
You connect to the melody.
The music and everything, I think, is also
right.
Perfect in my mind.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those, put on headphones, lay in your bed, lights out, and just listen.
Yeah.
Which is as depressing as it gets.
But a lot of these tracks are very, very sad, very, very depressing, about, you might think, failed relationships, but really it's about an underlying mental illness. Something like Medicine Bottle, where he talks about a relationship, but he's not talking about
the
relationship.
Focus.
He's not saying this relationship is going poor. He's saying, I need this relationship to be happy, which is not good.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a very...
You can want all you want, but it's not
a working relationship.
This is a very introspective album. I never... Even the song Medicine Bottle, I know, is not about the relationship. It's about his need for someone else. And he's relying on them like medication.
It's very...
It's
kind of similar to Pinkerton in that regard with its subject matter. Though I will say this album goes more...
I think Pinkerton... Well, while Pinkerton is more about relationships, this album is more about mental illness,
this album,
to be honest.
Really takes itself...
It takes that route of writing about it the way Pinkerton wrote about relationships.
Right, but what I think... like I said with Pinkerton, where there is a moment of happiness and a moment of just levity, I think for this album, it comes in the form of Lord Kill the Pain, because I'll say that track name and it sounds super dark and serious and sad, and the lyrics are kind of like that, but it's this upbeat, happy folk rock.
It's my
tune,
favorite song of the
which
what
is very, very... Yeah, but what he's saying, I feel like...
Like, I actually really like that song.
That's a great song.
By putting what he's saying, which is essentially, God, kill everyone else in the world so I can just have a nice, quiet evening.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty
and the thing
subject
is,
matter.
That's a
but
very,
it's
very...
Even, it's not framed in a funny
what
way.
What a 90s thing.
I think what the point of that track is for me is it's Mark... It's kind of him parodying himself in a way. It's the moment of self-reflection, of not taking himself too seriously, of contrasting the darkest lyrics on the album with the lightest instrumental.
Yeah, okay.
What a 90s thing to say. God, just kill everybody so I can have a piece of quiet here for a minute.
That's one of my favorite things.
There might be a modicum of truth, or at least some kind of feeling that inspired that in reality, but I think what he did with that song was take this sarcastic kind of... you know, not real desire and just blow it up to make it as dark and just take it to 11.
Yeah.
And put it on the happiest by far instrumental on the entire album.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a moment where of self-reflection, and I think it comes in a very, very needed point as the second to last track on the album, where the first three tracks are longest, they're the saddest, And then the last three tracks are all a little more hopeful. You know, Michael's not happy, but it's definitely bittersweet. Whereas tracks 24 and Medicine Bottle and Down Colorful Hill didn't really have the sweet in with the bitter.
They're very bitter. Down Colorful Hill especially. This was the track I struggled with the most, but is well, Not a Favorite is a very good track. The change in instrumentation towards the middle. Wow. When you really, I clicked back and forth before. I didn't have time to listen to it again before I came here today. I only heard this track twice, but listening to that change in instrumentation, it becomes so much, not heavier, just like it goes from. It feels like he's just dragging something behind him. Like,
yes.
I was talking like the instrumentation in the beginning is him kind of carrying this heavy load, but then the latter half is him crawling with it. When he said prayers die and like there's no hope,
yeah,
that is like one of the most dark and like,
prayers for success oddly, always die in time.
Yes,
is the word.
Like hope will always be extinguished. It's very and a very great way of saying it. It doesn't sound very cliche.
That's a track that I, like both of you, struggled with initially. I've listened to this album many, many times, and it's one of my favorites now. I can just bathe in it.
Right.
The sound of the guitar, the drumming on this album is fantastic. It's not that complex, but he always knows when to do a fill. It's never
anything unnecessary.
Yes, it's always just the right moment. And to me, that could go on for another 10 minutes. The more I listen to it, the better it gets.
No, it shouldn't. It's just fine the way it is.
I will say, my two major complaints about this thing is the length of the intro tracks, the two being Medicine Bottle and 24 is not that long. Medicine Bottle is like 90.
It's Medicine Bottle and
I always want Medicine Bottle to keep going when it's over.
I could write that song forever. As it's ending, I'm like, wait, I kind of don't want this to end.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about that.
And 24,
that was,
I love.
That's the one I struggle with the most, with the length.
For me, 24, it's not too long. It's only like 6.5 minutes. And then
that's a good song.
Absolutely. It has like three distinct instrumental parts, so it doesn't feel that long to me. Like it shifts into this piano backing instrumental, not really upbeat, but nice and very beautiful chord progression into a kind of dark and very gloomy, not really a guitar solo, but just some gloomy guitar meandering.
It's uncompromising. I can appreciate that, but it doesn't mean I really like how even in my later listens how long it kind of takes you through. And I think Japanese to English is a pretty weak moment in the track list thing. I honestly, this track, the reverb,
why
is complete? The reverb completely destroys the vocals for me. On
Japan
track.
Ease.
I can't.
Dude, what the hell?
That was all pronunciation.
That always kind of weirds me out. But same thing. He's from Ohio. There's some weird Ohio pronunciations, man.
I feel like that track also kills the sub-narrative for me a little bit. It goes a little too deep into it without explaining anything. So instead of feeling like this cool, obscure thing I can read into on my own, it's spelled out but with like three letters from the alphabet. It's like if you spelled out with only vowels or something.
See, I think...
It's too clear, and I cannot stand the reverb on this track.
Lyrically, it's not one of my favorites. Musically, it might be my least favorite track on the album, but that means like a 9 compared to a bunch of 10s, so I still love it. I think it has a great composition.
See, that's me like...
It starts and it's still kind of sad, but then it picks up near the end and the chorus is much more uplifting.
See, that's funny, like Lord Kill the Paint song-wise is my favorite track, but lyrically, I really like Japanese Tinglish. I thought it was.
I thought lyric. I don't.
And maybe
know.
That's just from listening to Pinkerton a bunch, but like I just love that heart, like somber, heartfelt, just talking about how he really wants to be with this girl, but it's
really
hard
it.
To. That
this is an album that is a grower, and
that's true. Because from listen one, like was totally ready.
I was the opposite. I feel like if I listen to this another time, I'm not gonna like it.
It's not an album that you can listen to all.
I think
the
my
time.
Problem is that.
I don't
relate to it enough on your level, like how you relate it on mine.
I
think
love
that's
how
the big
dark
issue.
The subject matter is. For me, this would be something I would definitely.
Everything he sings about, I'm like, that's all fine and dandy, but
I
don't relate to
I
it.
I wouldn't touch Pinkerton if I was in a bad mood. I would go to this album in a heartbeat if I were feeling
For me, like, and this is definitely an album where if you can't relate to anything that he's talking about, It's very uncompromising.
That's
that
the problem. That's the problem. The longness of it and the lyrics go hand in hand with what you're feeling. It's why would you go to this long album when you're not feeling any sort of thing. It's definitely, you have to be in a state
because
of mind.
To be truly dejected is to, joy is disgusting.
Yeah.
So you want to go.
Yeah, I could never listen to a Pinkerton when I'm feeling down because it's so different than what I'm currently feeling.
It's uplifting. Pinkerton feels good all the way
through. It's catharsis.
Well, I think that, the difference between this album is that this is sad and is meant to be sad. Pinkerton is sad, but it still has some of that, poppiness.
I think there's so many elements that set it apart from being sad. It's cheesy, it's catchy, and
it's cheesy.
Moments.
It has cheesy moments.
It's Rivers Cuomo, the album. If you know who Rivers Cuomo is, it's him.
But the issues on
Philip
Hill, even though they're addressed pretty abstractly, and I could see what you say about the mental illness thing, because I really looked into that. I was reading these lyrics.
I got more of a bad relationship.
Oh, when he talks about,
and I guess it's just the surface level.
The best line in this album is when he talks about the thrill of looking out his window.
Yeah,
that is an incredible.
I do not
want to
lose the thrill of Yeah.
That's a masterful lyrical.
Scowl at the houses from my world in the bedroom.
It's awesome. I can see him so clearly shutting the curtain.
It is.
It's pretty impressive.
That moment is so poignant because he's saying, I feel really, really crappy. I want to feel better, but part of me is used to the crappiness.
And feeling worse is almost.
And feeling worse
almost,
has almost become a part of me at this point.
Yeah.
And that's what he's saying there. It's such a. And 24, where he talks about getting older,
really depressing. Awesome.
And he talks about how getting older is not enjoyable.
Yeah.
And how...
Honestly, thinking about some of his lyrics now on songs where he's, complaining about being old, but his view is much more upbeat recently.
Yeah.
But, hearing it here is very upsetting.
Like I said, it's catharsis, it's not upbeat, it's not happy. But when you're down, it's hard to listen to something that is happy. So listening to something that is to wallow can almost... by the time this album is over, I always feel better. Because the first three tracks are unrelentingly sad. And then you get into Japanese to English, which has a happier moment. It's like a folk rock tune.
It's kind of cute.
And then you get into... Yeah, I agree. And then you get into Lord Kill the Pain, which is very, very upbeat. And then Michael, which... isn't happy. It definitely has sadness in there, but it's beautiful.
Yeah,
I love the guitar sound on that track, where you can hear
the instrumentation,
the pick strumming against the strings, the way it's recorded.
The demo-ish quality lends itself to this album.
Absolutely,
In a great way.
Well, it all
is
working together with this theme of somber and loneliness and mental illness. Every choice made on this album is with a purpose.
Michael to me was kind of a. It was kind of a strange closer. For me, I had a hard time tying it into the rest of the album, but I think it was a great closer. And all
I think it ties in with feelings of...
I do.
With 24, with, nostalgia, missing childhood. Specifically, it's about...
Talking about stupid nose piercing, yeah.
Yeah, specifically, it's about missing a childhood friend that you've lost contact with, but when you take it in the context of the album, I think it fits because it is...
It's a feeling of longing for someone else, which hasn't really been shown on the album, other than maybe Japanese to English. So I agree.
And Medicine Bottle.
Medicine Bottle is a very disgusting longing. It's not a want for company.
Absolutely.
For
it's unhealthy.
You don't enjoy
it's
company.
Toxic.
It's absolutely unhealthy.
Yeah. That's a pretty relatable moment.
But to mention something about Michael, this sounds like a movie. It sounds like something that could never happen in real life. So he played that song live in the mid-90s.
Michael was his guitar.
Literally, I don't know if he had heard the album beforehand, but the guy that he talks about in that track, maybe he noticed Mark Kozlik band, in a band and thought, hey, I remember Mark Kozlik, I'll go check him out. And he was in the audience when he played Michael, and they reconnected. That sounds like a cheesy movie, but it actually happened.
Wow.
And he discussed this happening.
That's his real name, correct?
Yes.
It's an odd last name for Ohio. I always think that. Can't get away from
it. I think his
Kozlik.
Ancestry is Polish. I think I read an interview somewhere where he said that. But
that's not that weird. I mean, geez.
To me, musically, this album is perfect. Along with
Weezer, probably knows a lot of weird stuff about Weezer.
That's true.
I know Weezer and Ween are the bands where I'm like, I know everything about this.
The way that this album is recorded, the fact that it was just a bunch of demos where he mixed his vocals too high, but to the point where it's so.
Like I said, every...
Open, he's mixed his vocals so high that,
every choice,
you can't help but look.
It was a little too much the first listen, but it grew on me.
Every choice is with a purpose. It's... Nothing is like an accident. No, he sat down, was like, this is what I'm going to do with this, this, this. It's all going to come together with this one album.
And I think musically, how it's the reverby, distant sound, like it was being played live in a room with kind of bad acoustics.
How we're recording this podcast.
That all adds to...
The acoustics are great here.
The feeling of this album. And instrumentally, you know, I think all the songs, the songwriting is fantastic.
Yep.
The chord progressions are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. He's using all of these alternate tunings. It's absolutely beautiful. One of the things that I think makes Kozelek's music and on this album as well as the rest of his discography, one of the things that I really, really like about his music, he will use these beautiful, uplifting chord progressions while the lyrics are very sad. So instead of being...
That was the 90s, really.
It's this bittersweet. It's this bittersweet feeling. 92.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 92. I can definitely see that.
It's a pretty great release. I'm feeling like an 8 on this thing. It really grew on me. I was feeling not very good about it, but this is a pretty great piece of art with very few weaknesses, but weaknesses that overall do hurt the album for me. But I think they don't make me love it any less. I just acknowledge them as they are, because Japanese to English is pretty much a skip for me. But everything else on here is...
You can't skip it, man. It'll grow on you. I'm telling you right now.
I didn't skip it when I was listening, but, like, if I went back to this, I really wouldn't feel too... I cannot stand that reverb. I don't know. But, like, the, you know... I don't know. It just really didn't resonate with me at all.
I think you'll get... You know, it's a big leap to assume your opinion will change. But for
this
me...
This isn't for everybody. It's...
For me, it grew on me. Everything that I disliked about it initially, I ended up not caring or... doing a 180.
Mm-hmm. I did a 180 on a few things on here. Medicine Bottle being one of them. Down Copper Hill being a moment where I had a change of heart. I don't mind the length as much, but I'm not totally over it. It's uncompromising. I can appreciate that, but it doesn't mean I like it. So that's kind of how I feel about that.
7 out of 10 for me. It's how you feel about Pinkerton. I did enjoy it. There's just some major things about it that are just not for me. I don't connect to it on the same level as you. But I see it, and what he's doing is impressive.
It's really
again,
great.
92, for someone to just do something like this in 92.
It's honestly, it goes to show how
there's
fantastic
a lot
of a record label 4AD was, just to get on a brief, like,
rough.
Evo Watts Russell definitely had an ear for choosing very, very interesting bands.
I'm the opposite, Brian. The later half of this album is way better than the first half. I just...
No, I agree with that.
I can't deal with... Long tracks are not my thing. Like, 5 minutes tops is what I'll do. 6 is pushing it. But if you go beyond 6, your track has to be amazing.
Well, Chaz, I think you're just an impatient bastard.
Yeah.
You would be right, my friend.
That's
right.
I don't want to understand.
But Lord Kills the Pain is a song I'll definitely like. I'll listen on its own. Great song. Great song.
While I absolutely love the entirety of the album, the first three tracks are my favorite. I think they're...
Well, because that's the point.
I know, but I think they're the best written also for as long as...
Oh,
I
yeah.
Especially Medicine Bottle.
If it wasn't for the length and just how much... I don't really relate to it. It'd be
like the moment on Medicine Bottle.
I want to like this.
Where the drums come in, that just instrumental break where he's just bum 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 bum.
Oh, the marching.
Bum 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 bum.
The
bum 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 bum.
Yeah.
The drums are used to such an emotional effect. Yeah, the kind of marching band-esque on Down Purple Hill.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I loved it. Like, from the moment I heard it, I was like, for me, it dragged at first, because, you know, it's a 10-minute track. It's kind of need a minute to digest it, but God, man, that track is good.
I could just sit in the atmosphere of these tracks forever.
It's, well,
yeah, that's,
I guess...
That's
I guess
spiritually very strong.
It's one of those things where, I guess, if I was in a bad place and I listened to some of this, I'd probably be like, this is speaking
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, it's not...
But
like,
I've never really been in that... bad of a state where I needed to listen to something as slow and grueling as this.
There are definitely other albums in his discography that I can listen to in any frame of mind. I can put on while driving. This album is not one for everybody.
I guess that's why Pinkerton is so much to me. Like, I can relate to it and I can understand it, but it's still got catchy melodies and fun riffs and solos. I guess it's why it speaks
the
to
me. The
only
track on here that I listen to on its own when I'm feeling totally fine is Michael.
For me, it's going to be Lord. Because
it's just
that's
this nice, bittersweet.
Actually, I might pick up that song.
I would agree with Michael being.
I love the chord change in the end. Just how beautiful that chord progression is when all the drums come in. Just the last 2 minutes of that song, just riding out the little guitar melody.
Yeah. So what would you give it? Because
absolutely, this is a top 10 of all time for me. This is like my fifth favorite album of all.
You gave.
This is a 10 out of 10, 11 out of 10.
You can't give
this
11.
Is,
we don't do 11 here.
This
we
is
not do 11.
This is an absolute all-time favorite.
This is a Jacob Lindberg certified classic.
Absolutely. 100%. And we should move on from a tangent.
Enough
about
me and
Weezer.
Jacob. Let's get to Brian.
Let's talk about Brian's album.
You like it?
Against Me is a punk rock, formerly folk rock group from Florida. They had an amazing debut album, widely acclaimed. I personally love it as well. Reinventing Axl Rose in 2002, burst into the scene with that, and shortly after, released the EP we're talking about here today, The Disco Before the Breakdown. This is 3 tracks, 8 minutes long.
9 minutes, actually.
Oh.
I'm looking at it right now. It's 8:57.
Really?
You gotta know your stuff.
And mine. It's not even my favorite band anymore.
but, gotta call it when I see it.
Yeah, well, you know, that's fine.
2 out of 10.
Yeah, sure. I didn't really agree.
I'm getting revenge on Jacob and Brian today.
Even better than that would be like, I didn't listen.
No, in all seriousness, Brian.
But hold on. I want to talk about that. Okay. I want to hear your opinion last. I want to hear your first after I talk about this album. For me, the reason that I like this album so much, that I love this album so much, first tracks, very forlorn, emo, kind of overplayed start that breaks in the middle of this amazing, just blood rush. Lyrically, the subject matter of the first track is where the album is shining the most. It's, at the time, Tom Gable, currently Laura Jane Grey, is talking about the feeling of being transgender. Not, you know, it's 2002, so it's...
Yeah, I actually, when I listened to this album and read through the lyrics, I didn't know that she was talking about this in 2002.
It's amazing to go back and find these things.
Like, she's been going through this, like, for a while now.
Yeah, and obviously, the big... Transgender Dysphoria Blues, that album...
That was the coming out party, essentially.
Right, and this album was released over a decade before it had those themes in it already.
There were signs that are way more blatant now. There's a song off of New Wave, terrible album, called Ocean, great song, that directly addresses this with Tom at the time saying things like, and if I could have chosen, I would have been born a woman. Very forlorn, very touching. But for me, this EP embodies the fury associated with not being able to express that. I love the yelling chorus on Disco Before the Breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're going to laugh at us when they see us holding hands together like this. They wouldn't understand it. They told us all the reasons. He's not talking about being with someone else. He's talking about reconciling inside of himself the woman he wants to be.
What a great lyric.
And I love that. I love that society has progressed since 2002, you know? Like,
could you imagine?
So that she's able to come out and
yeah.
And
that's a ballsy move to write lyrics like that.
It's
in 2002.
For me, it's insane.
We're like, the humor, if you look back at like big comedies of the 2000s, the humor is as cringy as it ever gets. It's but like...
Well, social climate's very different.
Well, yeah, but like, to speak your mind like that in 2002.
I think it's insulting to call it anything other than just brutally personal. And it wants a celebration and a self-damnation.
So what makes it therapeutic for you?
The release, I don't relate to the struggle of, I'm not transgender myself, but I do very much recognize and have always been in a way kind of fascinated and awed by the struggle that transgender people go through. But all at once, this album is about the super personal problem you feel like no one else understands. Like, you can tell people about your problems, but do they ever really get how you're reacting to them, which is way more important than the problem you have? This is taking that internalized feeling of no one's gonna know what I mean when I react this way or act on the feeling I have right now, but you proceed anyway. For me, when he at the time was talking about holding hands with the woman he wants to be, it's unapologetically representing yourself and not being afraid of what other people think about how you deal with the things you struggle with. For me, another moment, tonight we're going to give it 35%, is an extremely forlorn moment where you can't deal with what's going on. You're very much overcome by this overwhelming pressure, and you're praying in a bathroom to a God you don't believe in. I don't think this is revolutionary songwriting by any means. I just think it's very authentic, and I very much recognize...
You don't have to be revolutionary to have... This is... From the heart.
That's
good lyricism.
This is the opposite side of Colorful Hill for me. It's the writing on Colorful Hill is leagues ahead of the stuff on here in some respect.
This is
not that Colorful Hill feels less genuine, because I think it's a very genuine, very dark album, but this for me is relying on that genuineness to propel this music forward.
I call this more personal than Pinkerton.
It's like, very blatant.
She's going deep on this.
Yeah. And then tonight we're going to give it 30, or I'm sorry, beginning and an ending for me is... I mean, if out of the three, it's the weakest track for me, but I do love the very, you know, very...
I thought it was a good ending.
It sounds like a very nice, like, on the couch, you know, Friday.
I like the classic chord progressions. Like, that chord progression is so, like...
The demo-ish quality, the riff on Before the Breakdown, that boom, ba-dun-da-dun, every time. I'm so ready for the song to just start. But I want to know, I love this album. I give this, like, a strong 9 out of 10. There are very few things I think are wrong with this EP. It has the image of being 3 songs, 8 minutes... But how I relate to it personally is very strong. I want to know what Jacob Lindberg thinks of this album, because this might be the one where we really disagree. I didn't think you would like this.
I think you're going to be...
Pleasantly surprised?
Yeah, you're going to be pleasantly surprised. I think my biggest issue with this album is that it's... I want more.
Me too!
I wish it was short! I wish it was longer.
Why?
Obviously, it's an EP, so...
But, like, this should have just been an album.
This follows one of their... You guys need to go listen to Reinventing Axl Rose. It's an 8 out of 10 for me. I love that release. It's a 9 on some days, really. Like, it's a really great album, but this is following that explosive release, which those topics are more socially charged, and then you get this track, which is incredible. And then you get these tracks, and Reinventing Axl Rose is also critiquing the punk scene. He's very much tackling things that... Laura held dear, but this is, you know, this goes beyond those things for me, because it's a completely idiosyncratic struggle. There's no relating to this if, you know, really, realistically, there's no relating to this if you're not transgender, or you haven't been through the feelings that Tom at the time was feeling about how he couldn't be who he wanted to be.
But it's told in such a way.
But for me, that just relentless.
Yeah.
Like, I love the... calm and the release on all these tracks. The this Before the Breakdown, the calm start into the fire, like just complete hellstorm of the chorus. From Tonight We're Gonna Give It 35, the very forlorn playing at the beginning that breaks down at the end into a very emo like ballad of sorts. And then Tonight We're Gonna Give It beginning and an ending. The very quiet, calm, very nice playing into the screaming at the end of that track.
Mm-hmm.
I love how this album builds momentum with each track.
Oh yeah, this. Like Jacob said, I want more. My only problems with it are production's a little weak. I wish it was a little more refined. I can't understand the singer sometimes, but... And I guess that's the, like, she's screaming her heart out in this.
Well,
but
I don't totally understand every lyric. I don't know all the lyrics.
It's one of those things where it's like,
so.
I get it, but, like, I want to hear what you're saying, because she's saying some damn good lyrics.
You lose so much when you take away that raw scream.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. These are nitpicks at best. This is a good album, or EP.
This is very good, and I think, along with lyrically, this is a very good album musically.
How the sky kind of gets in the first track with those horns.
Yeah,
I think
the instrumentation here.
Against Me should use horns more often.
No, they shouldn't.
I think
their strength. Jacob will love this on Reinventing Axl Rose. Should you go listen to it? If I listen to Benji, can you do Reinventing Axl Rose?
Yeah, yeah.
You will love the folk influences.
Love the acoustic guitars on this.
Oh yeah,
I thought that
you guys have seen my true music love. I love ska, so like to hear some horns and some nice punk rock is.
I mean, when the horns come out,
I thought that the band was really, really tight. I really, really enjoyed the acoustic guitar, the horns in the first track. I thought that these songs were well composed. They were simple, but they weren't...
They're kind of classic.
Too simple. They were just very, very well written and well composed.
Classic chord progression used here. I love it.
Yeah, like, this is an album that I am really close, like, I really debated between 7 and 8, and I think I'm gonna, it's like a strong 7. I really, really appreciated everything that was going on in this release.
8 for me.
I wanted something more. I wanted it to be longer. With more listens, if I grow to become more attached to these tracks, then my rating could go up.
This is a damn good EP because it does what an EP's job is to do, to get you ready for more stuff. If I want to listen to more,
no,
I want to listen to more against
this. I don't think this is the listen to want to listen. I think Reinventing Axl Rose is the listen.
No, you misunderstand me. An EP's job is to, like, here's a little taste of some stuff for upcoming releases.
But
and that's what an EP
is. The sound is, they never go back to this. There's nothing else like this.
Which is interesting, because I really like
this
sound.
This
want more.
This is easily the most emo they go. Other times they're a little too screamy.
It really reminded me of, like, Rites of Spring, which is, like,
the
first
emo
band.
Mm-hmm.
And In Places Fugazi, which is always a good thing. Maybe a little bit of, like, hardcore punk from the 90s.
For me, I understand wanting more out of this, but I love how instantaneous it is.
I mean, you can't criticize an EP for being too short. It's kind of a non-criticism because it's what
well,
you
no,
says
it,
on the
no,
tape.
No, it's a good thing because, like, I love it. I want more.
Right, so I think I just need more time with these tracks. Like, and, like, I'm not at the point where I want to listen to this every day. But it's a very, very strong
release.
For
me, the first track only had that quality. Eventually, the second track became my favorite. My criticism of this that hold it back from being perfect is it ends abruptly. I kind of don't like how beginning and ending cuts out. The album ends,
yeah.
And I think my like Spotify's messed up. I guess the other one would be Nothing. It just ends kind of abruptly. I don't want more of this. Knowing how instantaneous this was, knowing this is a very different release.
I guess as an outsider looking in, my opinion's obviously going to be much different than...
Well, a few albums up to this point, or at least one of them.
I have listened to the coming out album, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Some great songs on there. But to hear this,
Talking about the lyrics a little bit, love the way disco starts. If you follow the jawline down over the heart, the cuts of your bone and muscle that make up your head to toe, just skin and threads, stitches and ligament.
Like, damn,
it's pretty cool, and I love how visceral it is too.
It reminds me of Transformer a little bit. The lyrics on that.
No, this is way more. This is more compelling.
I know. Yeah, you think this is better than that, but like
it is. It's leagues above it.
Don't start with me, Brian.
This is, I don't know. I enjoy TDB. It's certainly music, but, like, this is just so raw. And I think songs like Ocean, there are songs that...
It's weird that you say that, like, but you don't want them to...
No, I never want to hear this sound. They're not capable of making this sound that genuine again. I love this.
Yeah, this is like an album in a bottle.
Yeah. It's a very...
Lining in the... Like,
for me, it's like life the art that's being represented here and imitates the life that it was. It's a very idiosyncratic problem, but this is also a very idiosyncratic album. It's very unique in the discography. Nothing else they
made. It's kind of an album of the time, too, like when you think about it.
Yeah, and it kind of...
You couldn't
yeah.
make an album like this again and without it being a little...
I think maybe this is true of every album we've talked about.
Yeah.
Because Weezer couldn't make another Pinkerton.
Everyone wants to make another Pinkerton, but no one
Pinkerton
thinks they really could.
Mark Kozlik probably wants to strangle anyone who tells him to make another Down Colorful Hill, because why would you want to feel like that?
Well,
you know?
If you think Pinkerton got ripped apart when it came out originally, it would get destroyed.
No.
Get, like, worse.
That's where I disagree with you. If Pinkerton came out today, it would be praised beyond belief because of how depressed everyone is. And like,
no,
and how emo everyone is. Nah, this
people would destroy Pinkerton.
No,
if Weezer releases Pinkerton today, they're like, "Who's this new pop?"
All everybody wants
in reverse. Like,
all everyone wants
them
to do is release another Pinkerton.
That's no.
Well, they love that sound and lyricism.
Well, you have to ignore music fans because they can really ruin stuff. Because if I heard the opinion, you should make another Pinkerton. Eventually, I'd be like, I hate Pinkerton because it made people think this way.
Well, it's so funny.
Well, I mean, Kozlik had a lyric on his most recent album. Did I really make an album called Down Colorful Hill? That he says in his most recent album. So yeah, like it's kind of an interesting phenomenon when an artist releases an album that is very, very demonstrative of the feelings they were going through at the time, and it's released and there's no way to recapture it. And sometimes it's not a good thing to try to recapture it, or to want to recapture
it. Let it be. Yeah.
But it's just, it's an album of its time and of its place, and we just have to appreciate that for what it is instead of, you know, wishing for something similar to come out today, because it's just not going to happen. And if
this
it does,
the breakdown just made me want to listen to some good ska.
Let art change, even if it becomes worse. Against Me definitely goes downhill after that. It's not very quickly or very steeply, in my opinion. Not as steep as some people say, but I'm glad they changed. I didn't want to hear more of this, because eventually the sound becomes trite, overplayed, and you don't mean it anymore. You're just you know, you can only cater
not
to
necessarily.
The audience so
if
much.
If you it can sound
it
the same,
can lose punch.
If you just
I don't know how many
genuine goes a long way.
It does.
It really does. You could make the same song over and over, but if it is as real as it comes,
that's
and
true.
That's why
but
I love.
That's the question. Like, because these artists aren't in the same headspace that they were, you know,
like
a decade,
is way more happy
two decades
than
ago.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
People just love that music, and he's trying to be more poppy. That's what people don't like. Like, we want that rawness back, and instead of this pop garbage you're giving us.
I don't know. I don't mind if things are more poppy. Pinkerton's very pop, but it's very good. It has to be genuine.
It's the genuine goes a long way.
None of these albums feel fake.
That's right. None of these albums would work if it was fake.
Because if Pinkerton felt fake, it'd be a one.
If Down Clover Hill felt fake,
awful.
I'd be like, you have no reason to make a 10-minute track when everything you're saying is bullshit.
If these albums didn't feel genuine, if I felt like they were trying to make something instead of capture their own feelings, all of these would be a lot lower.
Yeah. I think that's a...
But I think that's why they speak so much to us personally in our own ways. We relate to that genuineness with each subject matter.
Man, my voice has taken such a turn since the beginning of this podcast. Like, I barely speak.
Brian, damn good pick. Great. Like, I wish it was an album.
This is, it's not fair because it's three tracks. It's like my favorite thing they made.
Good job, guys.
I think strong seven.
Strong
eight.
Seven. I feel both about that. You know,
it was originally
like, okay. That's better than I thought, but it's not a whole lot.
It was originally seven, but then you explain like what this album's really about and give it.
I thought you would be into the sound. I didn't think you would.
I thought the sound was pretty fantastic.
I thought
the songs were well written.
I didn't think you would doubt its sincerity, but I was worried about how the sound would come up. That was my.
No, I mean thing. I enjoy music that sounds like this.
It's a little. Well, it's. Well, maybe I view it differently then. Maybe I'm looking at the sound a little differently.
I think it falls in line with a lot of the hardcore punk that I enjoy. So
I love hearing that. And man, just don't listen to New Wave. Don't listen to White Crosses. Don't listen to TDB. Don't listen to any of those.
Actually, listen to TDB.
Don't listen
to the coming out album.
You're gonna hear one of their worst songs. Don't do it.
No, do it.
All right. So we should talk about the albums that we are going to.
It's a regular
talk about.
Episode, boys.
Start with Chaz, then go to Jacob. I have to. I don't know.
You haven't decided yet, have you?
I don't really know.
Just to give you guys context, Brian texted us before we recorded this and said, "I'm gonna have an album picked before we start."
Me
recording.
Me and Jacob got to talking about Benji, and you know.
Well, my next pick is an album I've been meaning to listen to, and actually listened to all the way through before I picked it. I knew I'd have to pick it eventually, so I thought now's the best time. It's an album you both haven't heard, which I'm very excited for. It is a band Jacob is familiar with, though. Brian, I don't think you've ever even heard of this band. If you have, great, but it's Get Lost by the Magnetic Fields. Classic 90s synth-pop album that I cannot wait to discuss.
I have realized that a lot of the stuff that I've chosen has been pretty well-loved. Maybe not like a...
My God.
A widely accepted classic, but
unless
something with a fan base. I have chosen specifically for this week something that I think is a lost gem. Something that wasn't recognized when it came out. Something that has some people who enjoy it today, but I don't feel like it's talked about nearly enough. It's the 1987 album by Jane Siberry. Siberry? Siberry. Yeah.
You got it.
The Walking. It's a progressive pop, 80s pop, also with a good, heavy bit of experimental in there. Songs can get kind of long, Mr. Jenkins, so I expect you to sit and listen to it.
No.
Listen to this album. It's catchy, it's upbeat, it's definitely opposite feeling of Down Colorful Hill,
right.
So maybe, you know,
take your word for
it's
it.
An 80s pop album.
Thank you for picking a pop album.
I've
enjoyed your pop picks.
Mine is kind of poppy too, but if we're going to talk about depressing lyrics, oh boy, you guys are in for a treat. because this album brings it.
Like, this album, The Walking, it is about an hour long. Oh. I told you last week, it is dense. You're going to want to listen to it a lot. 3 minimum, and I would recommend more. Like, it is a lay down in bed with headphones on and get transported to a different place kind of album.
I have a busy weekend, so, you know.
All right, Brian.
Me and Jacob have heard this release, but I have to know what you think of it. And I actually haven't really heard you, Jacob, even talk about it. Usually I'm just gushing about it when I talk to him. We're going to listen to Sophie's Oil of Every Pearls on Insides. It's a release from this year.
It's
going to
be a poppy...
It's an experimental art pop.
Ooh, all right.
It's gonna be a two, but
you know. No. I feel like Chaz might be okay with this.
Maybe. Look, here's how it'll go. Spoilers, but he'll be like, "Oh, these first few tracks are really good," and then we'll get to, you know, maybe the last three. And he'll be like, "Hey, man, what happened?"
Yeah. Now, pop goes a lot.
Or like
catchy,
the middle.
Look, guys, what you gotta know about me is like catchy melody goes a long way for me.
Good luck.
Like,
drone cut on mine.
Mine ends with two lengthy ambient-ish.
What's the longest track on your album?
10 minutes, maybe.
You want to hear the longest on mine?
Damn it!
9 minutes.
No. Oh, no! The longest track on mine is like 5 minutes. You guys are animals.
Alright.
You guys are animals.
You gotta expand your horizons.
I already know what you're gonna say about the last track. Like, I dug it at first.
Look, you gotta get to the point in your life where you can absolutely adore a 15-minute hardcore punk record and an album with 10-15-minute
tracks.
That's
a big blind spot if you can't like longer tracks. Like, my blind spot is like, nothing. But like, I don't know.
Liar.
I have blind spots in music. I can't, think of them right now. Everyone has blind spots in music, but a long track, it's a pretty bad blind spot.
Well, we'll just have to see. Jacob, lead us out.
Whole new world.
All right, this has been Unwarranted Music Opinions. Join us again, where we will force each other to listen to albums that we may or may not enjoy, just to see what we think about them.
You better love
this has been the Therapeutic Albums Podcast. Thanks for listening.